This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Kerry Kasem.
Good late afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervy, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, on this lovely weekend, I am here, as usual, to be the managing partner of your life. And I am here with the lovely, the beautiful... one of my loves.
Oh, thanks,
I had
Alan.
To say one, because Nancy wouldn't be happy if I would have said my
upset,
love.
She'd be pretty upset, yeah.
Or Harper wouldn't either.
Or your mom.
Or my mom, who's sitting right here. A belated happy Valentine's Day, Kerry Kasem.
Happy Valentine's Day to you, too. Did you do something fun with Nancy?
Amazing. We put the kids to sleep. That was so
fantastic.
Much fun.
Fantastic.
And my mom helped, because she's
wonderful.
Here visiting.
And you all sat around.
But we've had a great week. We had Valentine's Day at Hudson School, which was fun, party, and at Harper School. And because it's Harper's birthday, and I want to wish Harper a fifth happy birthday, we were at her school doing Valentine's Day / celebrate Harper's birthday.
Oh, that's wonderful. I remember Valentine's Day at school. I always would make these cutout hearts. And then, you know.
Oh, you were the one that made those cutout hearts.
Yeah, and I still do. Did you see the one I put down next? It's right there.
You gave me a heart?
Yeah, there's a heart. There's a few of them. I hid them,
where
so you have
it?
To search for them. You got to search. I hid them around the studio. You can look later when I leave.
There's no, I don't have a heart on here. Sorry. The fact of the matter is that I have to tell you what I did when I was a kid, and I loved it so much.
What'd
we
you do?
Had shoe boxes, and we decorated them with all kinds of Valentine's Day stuff on it, and then we put them in our classroom, and the kids would drop in Valentines in the shoe boxes. Then I would bring them home, and I'd see all the Valentines
yes!
that I got. But I didn't get that many. That
I
was really kind of sad.
I didn't either. I was an ugly kid.
But you were popular.
Not at all. My sister was the popular one.
Really?
My brother was, too. I was the one with the buck teeth and the mustache and the big four eyes and the braces. No.
Yeah,
I
saw some pictures
hideous.
Of you on the internet, and,
yeah.
and you really didn't look that way.
No,
you
I
were
didn't,
in,
I
like,
didn't.
Lingerie and stuff.
Yeah, that was older. When I every night I went to bed saying, God, please make me pretty like the other girls, because I was teased mercilessly. So
right.
I carry the picture around with me. We should put it up on Facebook.
Well, I would love that.
Because people don't believe that, and this is a good picture. This is one of my good ones when I was a kid. I was hideous. I was absolutely
Is that what
hideous.
Your dad said, that you were hideous?
Oh, my mom. And you were beautiful. Well, then why did I come home crying every day when people called me four eyes or ugly or
really?
Other
wow.
way, like, things I can't say
I don't
on
even
the air.
Know why you're on this show.
I don't know. I don't know why you
should have gotten someone else. Mom, was I an ugly kid, too?
No, you were handsome, clever for your age.
For my
above,
age.
Above average.
Above average. Thank you. That's quite a compliment. I was a stud, wasn't I?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so when you look like this as a little girl, like your parents think you look good and pretty and everything, but when you
wow.
look like this,
whoa.
That's
you
pretty
know,
homely.
It's bad. It's bad. Here, take it. Pass it around. Pass it around. Pass it around.
I can't
take
reach
Take one
over
down.
There.
Pass
there.
It around.
Peter's taking it. Evelyn
yep.
Gervy.
Wow.
Welcome
yeah.
to Gervy's Law,
pretty
Mom.
Nasty.
Thank you.
And
yes,
Melanie.
Yeah, Melanie. So when you look like that as a kid,
aww,
yeah,
you're a cutie.
It's cute, but it's not cute when you're, you know, in that grade and
yeah,
you like boys
the,
and they
well,
look at you and tell you you're ugly. You know,
yeah.
it's not nice.
Well, it's not nice to say ugly. And
no,
I think
not,
all
kids
are beautiful.
Yeah.
And I would say if you had, you don't have any kids, Kerry. But
no,
if you had like 25 kids, you would say they were all beautiful. Why are you laughing? Some people in this room might have 25 kids. Who knows?
Yeah, nice segue.
I don't have 25.
Okay, you have more. Yes, more. So I want to introduce our guest. This is our special post-Valentine's Day show. Valentine's Day was this week, and we are celebrating this weekend, Valentine's Day, and we got a lot of love in this room. Isn't it exciting, Kerry? There's so much love.
I love love.
I love love too. I'm always happy when there's love. I have a great family. My wife, Nancy, my kids, Hudson and Harper, love them all. It's so amazing to be with them every day. And Mom, I'm so excited to have you here with us visiting. Of course, you will be leaving back to Toronto shortly. But it's nice to have you here on Valentine's Day.
I love being here.
We love having you. And speaking of love, I want to introduce our first guest. And we're all here, so we're all going to be on the mics at the same time. We have Peter Ellenstein, and he is an incredible, incredible story. You may have heard of him because he's been in the news so much on a lot of these programs. Inside Edition, didn't they do a big, huge, wonderful piece where they got everything right? Or was that two minutes of crap?
I have yet to have an article that got everything right. But...
Well, that's why you're here, Peter. So just as a background, Peter was a fledgling actor back in 87 through 94. We're going to give that seven-year period. It may have been greater than the seven-year period. Seven-year itch, I think he stopped. And as part of, what I say, you know, making some money, he was a sperm donor as an actor and quite a good one. I mean, as All Stars goes, I'm a big fan of Wayne Gretzky, who's one of the greatest hockey players in the world, was, of course. And I think Peter was one of the greatest sperm donors in the world. He was prolific, as they say. Sometimes he'd do five appointments a week. But what happened after that is so amazing that in October 2017, a Facebook message came through to Peter, and it was who, Peter?
It was a young woman who said that she believed that I was her father, that I was her donor father. She'd been trying to find her father, her biological father, from the time she was 8 years old. She was raised by a single mom. And finally, in piecing together a lot of different information from the sheets that she had and other things she'd gathered, she had deduced... she thought that it was me, and it had, when I had donated, you know, 30 years and so earlier, it was all anonymous, and there was no internet, there was no big data, there was, you know, really
well,
no way.
You were a big data.
I was a big something.
you had a big something. Before we go on, we are going, Dino's laughing. We got a crew laughing out here.
Quality, not quantity.
Exactly. You know, I got to tell you, Carrie, last week we had the constitutional law experts of the world, Adam Winkler and Ilya Soman, on the show talking about the Supreme Court cases in 2019. And now we are talking about sperm donors. And Melanie, we have Melanie Crystal here, Columbia Law School graduate, and she has worked for big law firms, O'Melveny & Myers, if I can say that. She represented healthcare companies and consumer products companies, very involved in the healthcare industry, and she became a sexual health advocate, and she is now the president, founder, and CEO of Laurels. She went from big law to sex tech. Is that a right expression?
Yeah, that's sex definitely tech?
You don't
a
mind
term
being
that
calling
is
sex
used.
So just quickly, why don't you, because we're going to get back to Melanie, but before we go to Peter, just so people, because people are sitting here, Dino is sitting here wondering, what is Laurels? What would take you out of O'Melveny & Myers, one of the large law firms, and put you into this entrepreneur activity that is really far from, I guess, practicing law?
It is quite far from practicing law. So I left because I had this idea of how to help more women receive oral sex.
I see.
So my product is called Laurels. They are lingerie for receiving oral sex.
Wow. I feel like we're on Shark Tank.
Yeah.
Do you want to invest?
You know, I think your mom wants to invest. I mean, her eyes went up and lit up. Yeah.
She lit up.
Yeah, she lit up.
Fantastic.
You know, I got to tell you, Melanie, that's the best tease. We're going to come back to you, but ooh, that's the best tease we've ever had on this show. I mean, if you're going to leave... if you're not going to listen to the rest of the show, you don't know what you're going to be missing. So we're going to talk about Laurels. We're going to talk about how you make that transition. And what I'm interested in, Melanie, we're going to talk about is you read a book called What Color Is Your Parachute?
Yes.
And that kind of got you moving into a direction of something that you really have passion for and love, because this is our Valentine's Day show. I wanted to say love. And Peter, when we talk about love, being a sperm donor isn't exactly – that's not the first word that comes to mind when you think of love.
No. I was purely mercenary.
Self-love.
Speaking. I don't know whether I call that love either. I was getting paid for something I was going to do anyway. You know, and so...
What, the masturbatorium? Is that what they called it?
They called it all sorts of things, I think. Man. There were a lot of in-jokes, I guess, amongst the technicians. They didn't usually tell us donors about all those different nicknames they had for the rooms we used. They were really just bathrooms.
Yeah. With reading material.
Purely mercenary.
Or
I was
viewing
supporting
material.
They did have viewing material.
Go ahead.
Nothing high-tech, and there wasn't any lingerie, and sadly.
Too bad.
It was too bad. But it whatever they had apparently worked. I was a young actor and trying to also start a theater company, and I was a waiter, and I worked in some TV production, and, you know, between jobs and going out of town for acting gigs, I did this because it was an easy way to make money, and, you know, and I sort of jokingly said, it'll improve the gene pool. I'm not sure that I did that, but it certainly...
I think you did.
Well, thank you. That's
you know, there,
very nice
of there you. Are some interesting legal issues that we have to talk about regarding privacy and some of those confidentiality. A lot of people question why is it now that you have been told that you have how many children?
Well, as of the current count of ones who I know of, I know their names and locations, 26.
Wow.
26.
And I've met 23 of them.
What's with the other three? Don't they want to meet Papa Sperm? Papa Jerk?
One of them is brand new, and the other two have issues. I always let – I never contact any of the kids myself first. I wait for them to contact me if they want to have contact, and I let them set the parameters of whatever type of relationship they might want because my sort of – I have no legal or financial obligation to them, but I feel like as long as – these kids are looking to try and find out where they are, I should try and be a positive thing in their lives.
That's awesome.
And that's sort of my philosophy. And so I respect whatever it is they want. And if they want a closer relationship, Rachel, the one who found me, she and I talk every day.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And we went to Europe for 3.5 weeks together last...
Did she call you dad?
She will refer to me as her dad, but she calls me Peter.
Okay.
And I tell them, you guys call me whatever you want. You tell me what you want me to call you and whether it's okay for me to refer to you as... your father, your donor father. I try and be respectful of what it is they want.
And does your mother refer to them as her grandchildren?
Absolutely, and she fells. She keeps saying, when am I going to meet more of my grandchildren?
Whoa.
She's 92.
Wow. You made her proud. She's getting she's shepping nachas.
Right.
Wow.
She went from a year and a half ago having 4 grandchildren to now having 30 grandchildren.
Have they all met your mom?
About 13 or 14 of them have met my mom.
That's amazing.
Yeah, wow. It's pretty wild.
You know, I want to talk about some of the issues involved with respect to confidentiality. And a lot of people are wondering as they're listening to this now, how do these kids find out about who you are? And we have to take a break because I know you're ready to answer the question. But it's really important to so that people will say, hey, is there confidentiality? Is there privacy? Why are these kids surrounding you now coming and going to Europe with you? So we'll talk about all these issues, legal issues, because it is a legal show. Right, Carrie?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790.
Keep his mind on nothing else. He takes the world for the good things.
Yeah, we're talking about love. When a man loves a woman, or a woman loves a man, or a woman loves a woman, or a man loves a man. It's just Valentine's Day, post-Valentine's Day. Carrie Kasem's looking at me like she's in love. Not with me, of course. Well...
I love how it's like color commentary on your co-host. I get it all the time. Half the time I can't defend myself.
People always wonder, they always ask me, does Carrie try and kill you after the show?
No, even when we fight, we're like, it's a show, whatever. We move on.
Well, don't tell people that.
Okay. I hold a grudge forever.
Absolutely. We're talking about love. We're talking about Valentine's Day. And we're talking about having a lot of kids through sperm donorship. We got right here now, we have, and I want to make sure it's correct, donor number 305 and donor number 217, same guy, 305 and 217. It's like when we've talked to some criminals who we've had on the show and we give them their prisoner number. We have Peter Ellenstein here. You may have seen him. He's been in the news a lot. Found out he has at least 26 kids through sperm donorship. And we also have Melanie Crystal here. She's the founder and CEO of Laurels. And this is something that a lot of people may be interested in. Women and men, of course, and we're going to talk about that in a second, but she's really intent on hearing from Peter how things are going with all of these 26 kids. And one of the things we want to talk about right at the outset here, Peter, is the burning question, the elephant in the room. How did they find you? Isn't it confidential? When you filled out that application or whatever you're doing now, you work through two sperm banks.
Correct.
And with those sperm banks, can't you feel comfortable that when you leave there, no one will ever know who donated that sperm?
Well, it was before the internet. So it was before big data, and they were each given a very brief information sheet. It gave a partial birth date, either month and day or year, but not both. It gave my ethnic background. It gave my height, my weight, my eye color, my blood type, a little bit of my family health history, and then a few small facts about what I was interested in. So it said I was, you know, in the entertainment industry as an actor and a director, and it said that I read, that I played basketball, and so I listed my favorite authors and that I sang.
But
and
wait
so
a second, Peter.
That's all they had.
But if I'm someone looking for the sperm donor and I say, oh, I'm looking for someone who reads, that doesn't really limit it very much.
Yeah, how did they find you?
It's a long story, but basically there was something that was founded in the early 2000s called the Donor Sibling Registry, where donor kids started to put their, and some donor parents, put up the information about their clinic, their donor number, the doctor, anything that they knew about the donor, and the location of the clinic, and they would post it online and started to create a database. And I think there's many tens of thousands of people have now found their sibling, their half-siblings through there, and shared information. And finally, what it sort of was is that because I donated at two different places, once some of them had found others, they were able to put two of the sheets together and get my full birth date. Oh. And Rachel, the one who found me, who's quite the sleuth, went, wait, he was an actor. He's in Los Angeles. I've got his full birth date. He was Jewish. I'm going to IMDb, the International Movie Database.
Wow.
Looked up my birth date, found a whole bunch of actors who had that birth date and went down the list and went, oh, I think that's it. She also was somebody, one of the other kids' mothers had been given an anecdotal piece of information that I had directed my father in a play. So when Rachel went to my website after finding me and saw on it in my bio that my father was an actor, that I directed him in some things, she went,
I think
this is it. Yeah.
Bingo. Wow. Melanie, you're looking at Peter, and you were in the industry, healthcare, health advocate now, sexual health advocate. What would you ask as a former old Melvin and Meyer attorney, what would you ask Peter about this situation and how this all went down?
I mean, I'm curious about what kind of confidentiality you were expecting when you gave those donations. And now in this era of intense Google searching like Rachel did, and now when it comes to 23andMe and all of these other databases, it seems like the landscape has really changed for you.
It's completely changed. I mean, and there's very little opportunity for anonymity anymore, although I think there are still some donors who are operating under that. What I had done was, it was anonymous donation. I think I had checked a box saying that if there was like a medical emergency that they could that the cryobank could contact me and find out if I was interested in potentially helping. And that was how I thought at some point maybe in my life I'll hear from somebody who needs a transplant or a blood donation or something, and I'll consider it then. And that was it. Other than that, it was just arbitrary speculation. Probably have a bunch of kids out there somewhere. Never thinking there were this many. I didn't realize I probably should have. I donated over many years and off and on. So,
can you make a living off of that?
No.
Okay.
But I could supplement my living off of it.
Like
I think
an
the
Uber
most I made
driver.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you ever been compared to an Uber driver?
I have been, yes.
You're supplementing your income the way you want to do it.
Right.
You know,
in your own time, right. I think they say something like 1 out of 100 guys has a high enough sperm count that they can take them as a donor.
Really? That's it?
Yeah.
1 out of 100?
Something like that, yeah.
I feel honored to be in the same room with you.
Yeah.
That's something. You know,
what can you say?
There have been lawsuits. There's one specific. James Angelus had lied on his profile, and the sperm bank was actually sued because apparently, you know, he said that he was in perfect health and that he was a jock and he was smart and everything, but, you know, he suffered from a lot of really debilitating conditions.
Wow. Back in the day, there were not any. They were basically took whatever I said. I mean, they would take blood from me every month or every 2 months or something in order to make sure I didn't have any diseases that were communicable. But that was about it. Nowadays, I understand there's a lot more screening that goes on, but there's still almost no regulation on the industry, and I think there should be. In Europe, there's no anonymous, completely anonymous things. There's usually a limit on the live births to 5 or 10 families.
You say limit on the live births, you're talking about over a lifetime that one
right.
sperm donor can only have 5 families involved in
right, and then they stop selling the sperm. But there, in the United States, there's zero regulation on that. So it's each of the sperm banks have just self-regulated, and different ones have different limits. And then those things have changed over time, and different sperm banks have brought other sperm banks. And for instance, the 2 places that I donated, one of them ended up absorbing the other one. So all of my samples came to the same place, and they both had different requirements and issues and ways of record keeping and reporting. So there's very different information from the 2 places, but they're now under one roof, and it's much better. You know, it's not regulated, but I think they do a better job now of informing everybody about how it works and what's going on.
Yeah.
Did most of your sperm go to single mothers? Was it, gay couples, lesbian couples? Did you have anybody that was maybe that the husband was Sarah?
Well, I'd hate to know what male gay couples were wanting with my sperm. But
can you buy it and then get a surrogate? I mean, you can do that. Oh, I guess they would use their own, correct?
I would
yeah,
hope so.
Yeah,
you
think
so.
They'd use their own, right? Okay. So it would have to be the
that
come
be
on,
interesting.
Come on, Carrie, get with the program.
I'm thinking you'd just give it to a surrogate and then you'd have the baby, but I forget. Yes, you can.
Well, there is
yourself.
Egg donation, and a lot of male couples are using egg donation to do that in order that they'll have kids. And sometimes I think they're even mixing their sperm so that it So they
together?
Don't know. Yeah.
So they
or they'll both do use the same surrogate. I mean, there's different things that different couples are doing
okay.
in order to try and make it more of a holistic family. It was a mix of single mothers, of lesbian couples, and then couples who just the father was infertile. Maybe he'd had a previous marriage and had a vasectomy. Maybe he had cancer at some point. There were all different reasons. And so it was a whole variety of different things. And each kid's story is wild. One of the girls was raised by lesbians. They were divorced when she was 5, and they each remarried, so she was raised by 4 moms.
Wow. And
I'm of Jewish background, and I said to her, did you know you were Jewish? And she said, oh, yeah, I think I knew that. I said, but you weren't raised Jewish. And she said, no. And I said, well, what were you raised? She said, lesbian.
Oh, my God.
It was pretty fun.
So, Mom, you were talking about on the way in, you were saying, what happens on Father's Day? What is happening? So why don't you ask him how, last Father's Day was? Closer to the mic, though.
How was last Father's Day?
It was actually very nice. A bunch of them took me out to brunch.
So they all know each other?
They know each other, or did they just meet?
They have slowly begun to meet each other. We've had several sort of reunions. We have a Facebook page that's just for the kids and me. We have a Facebook group, a group chat that gets really wild. There's an extended family Facebook page where each of the kids is allowed to put whoever they want that's either a close family member mm-hmm. or extended family in that group for sort of bigger announcements. There's a local Southern California group. And so the kids are really forming all different types of relationships. 3 of the girls are actually going to move in together next month.
Wow.
Into a house.
Do they look alike?
Some of them look very much alike, and others look very different, but they look like all different members of my family, their family, and it's really crazy. Some of them sound like me. Some of them move like me. There's a crazy sense of humor that runs between most of them that's kind of word-oriented and snarky and profane, kind of like mine. And almost all of them are liberal-leaning, no matter what type of household they were brought up in. They're finding that that is, that there's a genetic...
I knew it was in the genes.
It is.
How that's about fascinating.
Holidays. Like, do they all get together?
No, they almost all have their own families, so they spend the holidays. But, like, this last Thanksgiving, all the ones in Southern California got together on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. Okay. And the first year that we all met, we had got together a few days after Christmas. We all got together. So we're kind of creating our own holidays. The anniversary of when Rachel found me is October 6th. So we're sort of looking at that as a date to sort of center some things around. And then we're also centering things around like clusters of birthdays, trying to arrange that.
How do you celebrate Christmas and Hanukkah?
My family celebrated anything you could possibly celebrate.
Let there be a lot of celebrating.
You know, any opportunity to gay, hey, we're alive and we're not starving. Let's have a good time.
You know, it's wonderful to hear all this positive thought regarding this. And it's just so nice to see your face light up when you talk about them. But not everyone has been that supportive with you. And after the break, I want to talk about your family and some friends who may not have been that supportive hearing about all of this coming out. And I know you've handled it very well. We're talking to Peter Ellenstein and Melanie Crystal. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790.
I found a love for me. Darling, just dive right in.
All right. Follow my lead. You're really piling it on thick with this love theme today.
I love it. Let's just listen to this song.
Beautiful. We're talking hardcore law today.
Maybe not.
Hardcore law. We're talking... to Peter Ellenstein and Melanie Crystal. We're talking about, what are we talking about, Carrie?
We are talking about having lots of children because you're a sperm donor. And then we're talking to Melanie about going from a lawyer to a sex expert. That's basically what we're doing here today.
Peter and Melanie are both nodding their heads, so I'm going to go with that. You know, Peter, of course, has... his own career in his own right. You've worked as a producer, director, Los Angeles Rep Company, the long-running show Assassins, probably longest running for the LA Theater Center. So congratulations on that. Have some of the kids, some of the 25-odd or 26, 23, however many you've met.
They're odd anyway.
They're odd. Have they taken an interest in what you have done as first an actor and then, of course, as a producer and a director?
They have. A number of them now sort of understand where their theatrical bent came from. Many of them were interested in the performing arts throughout high school and things, and their parents didn't understand where that interest came from. So that it answered questions. I should add, about a third of them did not know that they were donor kids until much later in life. Mm-hmm. And so that also sort of changes the way they react to things, how they deal with some of the family stuff. And so it also answered a lot of questions for themselves about themselves. And that's one of the things that the kids are looking for. They want to understand who they are and where they come from. And part of that story is the genetic story and how that history plays out. So like my father was an actor and director who did a lot of stuff. And his father was the first Jewish mayor of a major American city in Newark. And so they have a history that's an interesting history. And yeah, they were interested. They make fun of me a lot. It's the first time in my life my bad humor was referred to as dad jokes, and now the standard reaction is boo to any bad joke I make.
And you have no biological children. You were married, and you had a daughter.
I had a stepdaughter. Right, but she had a dad who was a very involved father, and so I was just another hopefully positive adult in her life.
So this is a wonderful thing for you, having this opportunity to have all of these children.
26 kids.
And counting.
Yeah. But There have been some people, at least I've read, that have criticized you in one way or another, whether friends or family. But that's not all true, is it?
No. I mean, there's people have a lot of wild reactions to it. And I think it's an unusual and new phenomenon that's happening that is creating a new type of family, and we don't have any nomenclature for it. And so there's some people who were shocked at my reaction of kind of – I was shocked at my reaction of being overjoyed about it, of being so welcoming of – especially when I first connected with Rachel and a few of the other kids who I've really had really strong connections to, that I – it changed my whole life, changed my viewpoint. It changed, really opened up my heart and my brain to a different way of thinking. It gave me a sense of continuity in the world that I'd never had before. It's just been a very different experience. And in describing it.
Have you had any problems with the fathers? Like you mentioned, you know, Rachel welcomes you in.
No, there's a couple of the parents who have complicated reactions to it, who wrote some of the – I mean, I've gotten many, many beautiful notes from parents thanking me for giving them the greatest gift in their life and all that, which is totally undeserved on my part. But I'm really glad that it happened, that they were able to have children and all that. But that wasn't my – it was like I didn't start out going, oh, I'm going to do good in the world. I was just trying to make some extra money. I'm really glad that it turned out well instead of badly. Mm-hmm. You know, but no, there's a few who have complications, and it's usually if they have a complicated relationship with their kid or in their family, then I become a part of that complication also. But in most cases, they're grateful, and I have some very good friendly relationship with many of the parents. I met 6 or 7 of the mothers. I stayed overnight at one of the sets of parents' house. Father was great, and he's her dad. You know, he raised her, and he's her dad. I'm not her dad. You know,
are there any kids that are actually upset or angry, or there's something?
Not with me.
Okay.
And most of them are not angry. The ones who had the biggest problems were ones who kind of found out accidentally when they were teenagers through various means.
So they were upset they weren't told.
Every single one of them to a person believes that if you have a donor kid, you should tell them as early as possible so that they know.
Yeah.
Every single one of the kids agrees with that. And virtually every donor child that I've seen in some of the online groups says the same thing. But you understand in some of the circumstances why the parents at that time and where they might have lived and what was going on with their family didn't do that. And all the ones who found out as adults seem to really understand why their parents didn't. And they wish they had, but they forgive them for that and they move on because they're dealing with it as an adult. I think the problem is when they're a teenager and they're struggling with their identities to begin with, and you're already going through, you know, questioning your parents and all that, and then this piece of information drops. That's been more problematic for the ones who found out by mistake.
Now, Steve Chapman, who is a mutual friend of ours, tells me that you actually went to China to see one of them.
I did. In December, I went and visited the oldest son, Jeremy, who is teaching in China for a year. Aww. He's a wonderful, wonderful guy, and we've been developing a closer relationship since he showed up a year ago Thanksgiving time. And yeah, he's great. And I went and spent 10 days with him in China. And
that's amazing.
He's he's trying to be a stand-up comic. He got his master's in English.
He probably got that from you. The comedy.
Hopefully. So hopefully he's funnier than I am.
Now, speaking of stand-up comedy, Carrie always says...
Yeah, here we go.
Here we go. Why don't they make a movie about you or a documentary? And in fact, haven't they optioned the rights for your story?
There's a production company that optioned my dramatic rights, and then we're in negotiations now with a couple of different production companies about trying to potentially do a reality or a documentary thing on it. There's so many different points of view into the story, and there's other people other people like me who are experiencing the same thing. There's a lot that goes into it, and reality TV is often about the exploitive part of things.
Yeah,
and none of the kids nor I want to go into it in that way. We're happy to tell the story in a way that's enlightening and
engaging.
I hope
you have a good production company that doesn't do that. And you can do a docu-series instead of a reality series, because reality is not reality. Docu is more
which
of that.
We're
so
hoping
hopefully
to do.
That's what you'll get. And it depends on the network, too.
You know?
Yeah.
It sounds like it'll be fascinating. I, for one, would watch it. Melanie, would you watch Peter
Stone? I would absolutely watch that.
I did want to bring up one thing, if you, and I'm, I don't want to move into Melanie's time, but there is a the thing about the nomenclature and how you refer to people as like I say, my kids. And people, there's a lot of people who take exception to my calling them my kids or my children, but we don't have a word for it. And so I always say I will call them whatever they want. But there's a, it's a new thing, and it's a new style of family that is adults who are related, who are now getting to know each other, and it's an intentional family as opposed to it being an unintentional family.
Well, maybe where you the relationships will create.
I was about to say that you should create the nomenclature. You have that ability right now. You have the mic. You have the, you can create that. You know that, right? So why let somebody else? You should be the one that does that.
All right. Well, we're going to look forward to it. But let's talk about nomenclature. I'm going to pick up what you said. Laurels, Melanie Crystal. Tell us why Laurels. Why is it called Laurels?
So Laurels are lingerie for receiving oral sex. And when I named the product, I was thinking about a lot of different things. One of them is when you are looking at any kind of underwear product, it's often plural. So panties and undies, boxers, often plural. So I wanted a plural world word. I liked doing some sort of play on words. I wanted something that evoked oral sex to be involved. And so actually, Laurels is spelled L-Oral-S.
Not L-A-U-R-E-L-S.
Correct. Yep. L-Oral-S.
But some people would say that they had laurels from, you know, the activity.
Resting on those laurels.
Resting on the laurels,
yes.
Yeah.
And then also another thing that I, well, one reason I like the word laurels is that it already is in people's minds because of resting on your laurels. We just spell it differently.
Right.
And then also the first letter is L, which evokes these feelings of love and
love.
Lust and, you know, all of these beautiful
things. I knew you were going to bring us back to our thing.
Brought us back to love.
But you know what? One of the things that I'm intrigued by, because you went to Columbia Law School, a lawyer for O'Melveny & Myers, and then you read this book, What Color Is Your Parachute? And that's something that I think a lot of us wonder about, which is, what is our calling? What is our passion? You know, Peter's talked about having a passion for these kids. Tell us about what you got from the book, What Color Is Your Parachute? And by the way, Carrie, have you read the book?
No, I haven't even heard of it. I like it, though. I like the name of it.
Yeah, it's a really wonderful book. It's had, you know, several editions. I want to say about like 20 or so. And it's been around for a while. It's used for people who are trying to figure out, you know, what their path is in life with a career or perhaps to do a career path switch. And so I'd been a lawyer for about 4 years at the point that I read the book. And I loved many aspects of being a lawyer, but I felt like there was something more that I wanted to contribute in my life. I felt like there was something that I could be more passionate about. And in reading the book, I realized, you know, the things that I liked about being a lawyer, you know, speaking in front of groups and meeting with clients and preparing things from the very beginning and turning them into, you know, a big production down the line, that I could take a lot of those skills and turn them into something else, in particular entrepreneurship. And I also realized in looking at the book and really thinking about activities that I'd loved from my past was that that I was really interested in sexual health education. I had been a peer educator, a peer sex educator during college. I had done a lot of activities with the LGBT community. I did community organizing for LGBT rights. When I was a lawyer, I worked on gay marriage issues, and I wanted to bring something back into my career that had to do with sexuality and sexual health.
Wow.
Yes.
That's really something, because it brings to the point, you know, finding the passion, doing what you love. A lot of us lawyers, I speak to lawyers all the time, and, you know, there is a lot of whining about having to do this job, being a lawyer, and you found something that, you know, is really consistent with your skills and your passion. It's funny, because we're talking about love, and we're talking about reading a book which changes your life. And I will mention my wife, Nancy, who read a book called Calling in the One. I think that's what it's called. Have you ever heard that book?
No.
And then she found you?
Well, I'm asking all of you, both of you, I think, are single. You're single or single? Single?
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
so if you read, forget about that. You read the book, apparently it gives you the motivation, like Melanie is talking about, to find the one, or in this case, to be an entrepreneur and find the gig that you're really going to be happy with. Mom, have you read the book, Calling in the One?
No, but I'm going to get it tomorrow.
She's going to get right on it for her next cruise. Yeah. I mean, the next cruise, right? You got to go on that singles cruise.
Yeah, and read if you're reading it, it'll happen for
okay,
you.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, we got to take a quick break. We're going to talk more to Melanie Crystal after break. You're listening to Gurvy's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Glass is always half full when you're listening to Gurvy's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
What I want, you've got that mind. Yeah, is this a love song? It's a little bit, got a little beat going on. That we're finishing with an upbeat tune. And when we were between breaks, when we were at the break, my mom was saying that
she can't wait to get on it. Like,
she's
going to
read
the
that
books.
Book, Calling in the One.
She's going to go to Laurel.
She said she wants some blind dates, but at her age, she said most of them are blind. Is that what you said, Mom?
I did.
Well, there's still
okay.
some hope for you, isn't there?
Of course. I'm still alive. I'm still breathing.
You just
laughing,
hope,
talking.
Hope that the man is still breathing, too.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Okay, carry your luck. Ask Melanie. I know before the show you wanted to ask Melanie.
Oh, did I really?
Yeah,
I know that you know that I really wanted to do that. Oh, come on.
Here's
no,
the
we
question.
Were fascinated by you before you walked in.
Wait,
we're
not
like,
we. Just say you.
Yeah, we both were.
Go ahead. Ask
how
the question.
How do you do that? No,
ask
it is. What I'm asking. I'm just, what, honestly, this is so different than what being a lawyer to going into what you call it, sex tech.
Yeah.
Sex, and why, first of all, why is it called sex tech? Mm-hmm. And did you have any problem kind of shifting into that, going from I'm a lawyer to now I'm doing lingerie sex products?
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely different,
completely.
Obviously. So sex tech is short for sexual health technology. It's a term that's used within the industry. There's a lot of wonderful companies out there working on vibrators and, condom companies that are focused on millennial women, for example. So there's been a lot of really wonderful companies out there that are in the sex tech space. And as for the switch, I mean, it has certainly been quite a big switch. But that's just in what I'm doing day to day. And I'm still the same person. I still have a lawyer mind, which often comes into play, in the entrepreneurial world. And, I still maintain a lot of really wonderful friendships with a lot of the lawyers I worked with. I still am, talk with a lot of my former bosses. And, the transition has been, I guess, easier than you might expect. Yeah.
That brought a smile to your face. Carrie's thinking.
It's a lot. It's a lot to make a complete change, a career change, especially when you've gone to school for this. You're doing, your whole life is focused on one thing. You make it, and then you're like, oh, yeah, throw that away. We're going to do something else.
I wouldn't say that I've thrown it away.
So
I certainly
do you still
wouldn't
practice?
Say that. So I do practice a little bit, but also when it comes to Laurels.
Wait, are we talking about law?
Yeah.
Or practicing with Laurels?
I'm talking about law.
Okay, she probably does both, but go ahead.
So when
Wait
I started...
Wait a second. My mom is sitting here. Can we stop? This reminds me of when the Howard Stern movie came out. I didn't realize that I took my parents to the Howard Stern movie, and they sat beside me, and I'm having the flashback right now. Go ahead, Melanie.
So
I'm not listening.
So when I created the product, one of the first things that I did was, you know, apply my legal skills and work on the patents for the product. I knew that this was very new and that this hadn't been done before. So there is a product out there that's called the Dental Dam. That is a product that is used for women who are receiving oral sex, and it is an STD prevention device. So those have been around for, you know, 20 or 30 years. And when I was in college and doing peer sex education, we would talk about this product, and it was such a laughingstock. It really wasn't designed with women's bodies and minds, and it didn't help people feel sexy at a time when they are inherently being intimate and feeling very vulnerable. So I realized that this product could be turned into something that could really help so many women really enjoy wonderful intimate experiences. But it had to be designed really well, and we needed to make an entirely new manufacturing process to make it happen. So I figured out over time how to do that, and then that is within these patents that I worked on along with a patent attorney. So that's been one way laws come in. Laws come in a lot of ways, but now I'm able to work on this thing that's helping so many people have wonderful intimate experiences that they wouldn't be having otherwise, and that's incredible.
Tell us about the company, where people can find it online or otherwise. How do people find out more about Laurels and how they might get something out of it?
So Laurels are available online at mylaurels.com. That's MYLORALS.com. And also at mylaurels at Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And so the product is for women who love the idea of oral, but then often when it comes to the reality, they'll end up saying no. And so what we found is that women have said no for a variety of reasons. Some women say no because they didn't shower that day. Some women will say no because their partner has a scratchy beard and it physically hurts them to receive oral sex. Some
women. Peter?
Yeah, Peter should.
No offense here.
He's got a big beard.
Yeah. You know, some women will say no when they're on their periods. And the idea with Laurels is that they are made of the same material as condoms. They're incredibly thin, incredibly stretchy, so you can feel all the sensations that your partner's passing along. But then they're non-porous, and so they block anything that's holding you back from saying yes. And so
some women are just, they don't like the way they look down there.
Yeah.
So does that block out that whole look too, or is it clear?
So the product is matte. So they're not see-through at this point. We are planning on doing a see-through version in the future so that people can have a choice between both of those options. But for now, you know, you're able to cover up your body to the extent that you want. However, the material is so thin that the giver of oral sex is able to basically see, you know, all of the curves of his partner's body, his or her partner's body, and be able to enjoy everything in that way and kind of navigate where they're going.
So how's the company? We only have 30 seconds. How's the company been doing, and what do you expect in the future?
It's been doing great. So we started selling product in November, started distributing product in November, and we have sold 4,000 panties across 15 countries, and we've gotten all this really wonderful feedback from people who this has really improved their relationships. It has helped them to be able to say yes to oral sex when they had otherwise said no, in some cases for decades.
I feel like Mr. Wonderful on Shark Tank, and I'm ready to invest. Are you taking investments? You know, this has been a fun show. Melanie, Crystal, I want to thank you so much for being here. Good luck with Laurels, founder and CEO. Melanie, Crystal, it's a pleasure meeting you and having you here.
Yeah, you as well. This was wonderful. Thank you.
And Peter, wow. We need to have you come on, you know, next year with an update. How many kids are you going to have next year?
We'll see. I know that there are at least 5 more out there somewhere.
At least 5 more.
Yeah,
probably
we don't
more.
Know names or locations, but...
It's a fascinating story, and, you know, just it makes me feel good to see how your face lights up talking about all of these kids.
It's been an incredible blessing.
All right. Well, I hope everyone has incredible blessings this week. Thanks for listening to Gervie's Law. I'm Alan Gervie. She's Carrie Kasem. We'll see you next week. And for my mom, Maybe you'll be on next week or you'll be in Toronto. We'll see.
We'll see.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.